They're checking cherubim pots strewn strategically along the daily. Charter boys are tying paternosters in preparation for the fray. Tinnies are being towed to target on the Arnhem Highway. Over in Gove, they're rigging up teasers for the big boys. There's an air of anxious optimism at harbourside boat ramps as launch time looms. And in the front bar of a top-end pub.
So did the tax man get you in the end?
Oh, did they what? Thought I'd get a half-decent return. I was already licking my lips at just how juicy it was going to be. But all that came back was the head of a large coral trout.
Whoa. All right, I meant the actual tax man.
Yeah, the men in grey suits. Didn't even leave me a fillet.
No. The actual ATO, the Australian Government tax man.
Oh, I see. No, my return was crap. It was comparable to a coral trout head missing its body, really.
Wharton.
Already.
More.
Oh, God.
Get your bums in the boat and get on with it.
G'day fishos, and welcome to the tinny where another week when he's back. Wharton, welcome back. It feels like an eon
in what
you haven't been here.
Well, in what you and Beard were describing last week as the bosom. I did notice that reference a few times in last week's show.
It's a shame when one of us is away that the other listens, because you can't get away with much.
I think it's a good quality assurance mechanism. And it's also good personally to know that you may still have a job when you come back. Because I do value this, you know that, don't you? I value you and I value the opportunity to be part of the tinny.
And you felt like you were embraced by the warm and sweaty bosom, I hoped, in the 2 weeks you've been away.
Sweaty it was. I have been away for a couple of weeks and I've brought back some wisdom for the listeners, as I often do on my travels. So I was in Alice Springs for 2 weeks. The first bit of wisdom...
Why do I close my eyes and shake my head when I hear it?
You love it.
Go ahead, bro.
The first bit of wisdom is if you are going to fish the Todd River, get the tides right, okay? Do some research, because, mate, there's no water there. Beautiful snags. I walked it one day. I did an afternoon Sunday walk along the banks of the Todd River, just inspecting the snags, and there's some really good barra country there, but there's just no water.
And I actually do know you well enough now to know you actually did.
Oh, yeah, I actually did. I was actually visualising barra if there was water.
Must be hard for you, being you.
Where you'd cast. Anyway, that's one bit of wisdom. Now, the other bit of wisdom was on return. I'll throw you a riddle. When can you see a full moon during neap tides? I'm laughing at this already. I haven't even delivered it. I went for a run a couple of days ago. Along
that full moon?
Along Casuarina Beach towards Lee Point there along the tracks. And I know they're neap tides because I fish them and I read the tide charts. And I just saw this. It was a glass off, right? I'm not joking, a glass off. So I've walked up this sand dune, and I don't know much about nudist beaches. I've walked up this sand dune, and I've just peeked over the sand dune to take this beautiful panoramic with a little bit of Casuarina on the left and the ocean in the background. And there it was. Some bloke, on a weekday, I might add, full moon, stark, naked, just lying there reading a book.
You promised wisdom, though, Andy. Like, what's the wisdom you garnered from that confronting experience that is worthy of sharing?
Well, don't go taking photographs of the glass off when you risk photographing an arse off along the Casuarina nudist beach. I didn't know it was there. There's actually a sign there that says... nudity.
Beach, yeah.
Yeah, but it says nudity this side of the pole, like a surf lot, you know, swim between the flags.
Oh.
It's like dress between the flags. They've actually marked out the boundaries. It's incredible. Every day's a school day.
Welcome back. Is that all you've got for us?
Look, the only other thing is it was Abby's turn last night to cook dinner, and we've got in-laws staying at the moment, so of course, you know, we're territory proud. And I said, look, don't worry about that. I'll go fishing. I'll grab some gold. I'm going to head round to Charles Point. I'll grab some goldies.
You said all this to the in-laws.
Yeah. I'll head. Look, what I'll do is
Here's what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, and I'll head out to 6 Mile on the way back and just grab a long tail. So you have some choice. Then you can pick which fish you want.
And Abba can cook it because it's her night.
Abby, all she's got to do is prepare the chips, and I'll help her with the fish. And Bob's your uncle. Actually, he's my father-in-law. True story. Mm. Nothing. 10 hours. My goodness. You know, one of the most painful things in life, apart from actual physical injury, was me driving from Dyna Beach boat ramp back to home and sending the text to the missus at work saying, could you grab some chicken and chips on the way home?
Oh, that's not a provider.
The wisdom is, don't let your mouth go writing checks that your body can't cash.
Yeah, but you're never going to learn that lesson.
No, I know. Anyway, it's good to be back in the bosom.
Yeah, it's really nice to have you back, mate. It's been a great leveller in the last 2 minutes.
I'm ready to focus. I'm ready for action because there's lots of great things on the show today. We're going to talk to a bloke that caught a very big mackerel off Mandora Jetty. We're going to talk to a bloke who's passionate, very passionate about catfish.
Disturbingly so.
We're going to talk to a bloke that feeds gourmet fish like mangrove jacks to mud crabs but has very, very good success. And we're also going to unpack that famous saying, good blue bone, Keith Watson, with
great,
the man himself, Keith Watson.
I think we all look forward to that.
All that and more in the very warm bosom that we call Tales from the Tinny.
That's a big monster.
Not much finessing. Get into it.
Double hookups always great fun when they start running around each other and getting lines intertwined.
Neck minute, you've got like a half hour fight trying to get your sinker back.
If you think you can do better... have a crack.
Tales from the Tinny.
Hi guys, I'm Gianluca. I've been living in Darwin for the latest 8 years, and recently on Monday just been to Mandora Jetty and I finally caught a nice beast. Big Mackie, 121 centimeters at the same day. I didn't stretch it, so because people do it, I didn't. And unfortunately, I couldn't check the weight, but I think it was over 10 kilos. That was a nice beast.
Was this on live bait off the jetty?
No, unfortunately, there were too many live baits. I couldn't get any of those, so I had to use my lucky hard plastic lure. And in like 10 minutes, meanwhile, some guy was saying, hey, mate, do you get any luck with that lure? After that sentence, 1 minute, boom, just my rod bent over the water and the fish was on.
What did you tell that guy when he said, do you ever catch anything on it?
I was saying, this is my lucky one. I beat to Dundee Beach, I got 1 meter, 30 centimeters cobia, I got a meter of GT, I normally get queenfish from here. And he was still looking at me because everyone knows that live baiting in Mandora is the best way to do it. But someday the water is so clear, live baits are everywhere, and your live bait in the middle of 1,000 live baits, really, really hard to hope to get a fish. I mean, who knows?
All right, so massive strike, followed by?
Followed by my line pointing to the right-hand side. I had to yell all people, all anglers there to move out. The fish has been so fast, and my line got trapped in other two lines. So I was fighting with the Mackie, and I let it go a bit the drag so they can untangle the rods, but they couldn't, so I kept fighting. Yeah, you can ask them. I kept fighting with the mackerel. It was a screaming reel. And I had to jump through the stairs, avoiding the pillars, avoiding the rubbish bin, avoiding the kits, avoiding the other buckets with live baits.
It's not easy over there, is it?
No, it hasn't been easy. And it was just 2 minutes of panic. The supervisor there, the old people, everyone had his opinion. Ah, you finished the line, the reel is getting spooled. I was just thinking, no, just let me get my fish.
Everybody shut the hell up and let me get my Mackie in.
Yes, I had nice words, I didn't use it. And the fight kept going, the fish was going. Suddenly I started feeling a different strength on the road, a different resistance. So I started winding back. I didn't get what kind of fish it was. Normally I get the mackerel there, there's 50, 60 centimeters. This one was pulling like a shark, like a GT. And when he came closer, and everyone started yelling, It's a Mackie. It's a mackerel. It's a mackerel. I couldn't even see because I had the crowd around. I have kids with their fishing rods, their hook hanging on my T-shirt. And I was just trying to do the best. Luckily, people there are lovely. They helped me out getting the fish out from the water. And it's been really nice.
You know, it's a very public place to fish. How many people were we talking?
I think there were 30 people at least, and the tide was low, so they were fishing on all directions. And as soon as I got the fish, everyone was just surrounding me. And the nice thing was, I've been there fishing there till nighttime, and it was just 1 p.m. when I got. And people were coming close to me. I didn't notice people. They were asking me, can you show me the picture of the mackerel you got? It was okay, it was really nice, really nice. That
you were a celebrity.
I kind of, yeah. People didn't get much. There were guys upstairs trying to get some shark, but they just took the line off and that's it. And I got a barracuda as well, but really not getting much, the guys there.
Gianluca, when people go fishing for a species like mackerel, you know, they often go prepared with a large esky. This wasn't the case with you this time, was it?
No, unfortunately, I wasn't prepared for that because I'm expecting fish from 60, 70 centimeters there. So I have a 20 centimeters esky, looks like a cube. People always laughed. So everyone was making the question, where are you going to keep it? Where are you going to keep it? I was saying, give me time, I'm going to show you. But at the end, it didn't fit in my esky. I had to give two slices of fillet to people there. They'd be nice with me, so I just shared a bit of fish. And despite that, one third of the fish fed 8 people. So I still have another third, and it's going to be a dinner soon.
Has this made your week?
Yes. My boss is jealous. He didn't speak with me till 11 this morning. And also, the only thing he could say, so did you get only one fish yesterday? And I would say, if you want to call it that, fish, yes, I got only that one in that size. Yes, it made me laugh.
Oh, you got your lure back, right? Obviously, yes. So it still remains the lucky lure.
Yes, it's still the lucky lure. It worked a lot on Dundee Beach from the boat. So that's why it's my lucky one. I will keep using it, despite people, they say, you're not going to get anything, mate. I say, you know what? I keep trying.
And this is a relatively deep diving hard body that's bibbed.
Yes.
Were you cranking fast retrieve or what?
No, just slowly, winding back slowly, and every three spins, a big push with the rod.
How was water clarity at Mandora Jetty when you caught it?
Was pretty clear, the water around the jetty, but when I got the fish was less than 10 meters from the jetty, and the sun was just behind us, so the shade was covering the water. I couldn't clearly see through the water, but it was pretty clear.
What happens next? What's the next mission?
This weekend, a friend of mine came from Italy, so we are going to Cales Crossing on Sunday, but earlier on Saturday, we're going to stop at Shady Camp, try to do a night session there for Barramundi.
You're doing it proper.
Yeah, I want to live my life full on with fishing, especially in Darwin, especially when I got holiday.
All right, now just finally, I know you are a trainer in Thai boxing. I was just wondering, is there anything from Thai boxing that you can bring to fishing?
Oh, just like what I love in fighting is the timing, just waiting the right time to do your action. And probably when you go for fishing, when you roll your cigarette and you're waiting for the moon, I don't know, you're waiting for the tide, that's maybe, is be patient and use the timing, the right timing to start fishing is the only thing.
Picking the right time to strike.
Yes, every day something new to learn.
All right, well, congratulations, 121 Mackie off the jetty at Mandora. It doesn't get much better than that. Thanks for talking to the tinny, man.
Thank you to you.
The dude's a Muay Thai trainer, Tim. I mean, did you like Bid's question about how it relates to fishing?
Not particularly. He always does that. Some really long bows attempted, don't you reckon?
Just doing his job.
Look, I admit that when he did make Clayton Archibald draw similarities between lawn bowls and fishing, that was okay. Mm. Specifically, it was casting at a jack and lawn bowling to the jack.
Yeah, yeah. Look, but, I mean, there's always parallels. It's one of the beautiful things about this recreational
interest
of ours.
That's the question. Is there Is there? I mean, you and Beard believe there to be, but is there?
Yes. Yes, there is.
It must be true then, I guess.
Yes, it is.
We just let it slide. The other thing that Beard said about the chat, apparently some dude, Andy, came up to him after he caught the Mackie and asked him what the biggest barra he'd caught was. And he said 67. And the dude said, well, I've caught one that's 87. To which Gian Lucha was ready to go the whole way. Okay, then. Let's compare bank balances. Let's compare how many times we've won Monopoly. Let's compare who has the longest feet, whatever you like. Who are you? And why are you trying to better me with some irrelevant comparison in my hour of success? Why are you coming to me and saying, I've eaten a bigger apple than the orange that you're now consuming? Go away.
Yeah,
go away, mate.
I understand. Look, I think we need to be comfortable letting people have their moment without storming in with our own impressive experiences.
Yes.
Sometimes it's about you, not about
correct.
Me.
Particularly when your impressive experience is in no way related to my recently executed impressive performance.
Correct. Even if it's better.
He could have just said, well done, mate. He could have just said, well done, that's awesome.
Yeah, you're right.
And kept it inside of his brain.
You're right.
And Tales from the Tinny says no.
You know, plenty of fish caught and plenty of fish lost.
We were giving it a crack, but it wasn't really working out the way we wanted it to.
I definitely thought I was hooked on a snag, for sure.
Happy days, we can get some sleep.
Tales from the Tinny.
There are some fishing competitions, Andy, that are held in the greatest of esteem nationally, if not internationally.
Indeed, and a lot of them come out of the Northern Territory.
That most of them do. I think I can speak for everyone when I say this next comp blows all of those ones you're thinking of out of the water. Not only for what it showcases in terms of sheer angling prowess, but the way it celebrates a legendary and majestic sports fish, unparalleled in power, and dare I say it, simply sheer beauty. I'm talking, of course, about the Palmo Game Fishing Club's annual Catfish Classic.
Ah, the Caddy Classic, chasing the old power tails, or PTs as they were once called. Did you remember that?
There was PTs.
They tried to get PTs off the ground. I mean, they're PT or caddy, whatever you call it, there is no greater prize.
One man who's been enviably crowned Caddy King a few times now, and presumably the man to beat this weekend is Jordan Smart. Jordan, before we get into the nitty-gritty, what is it about caddies that makes them such a formidable angling target?
Where do you start? It's in the name. They hit, they go. They go as hard, if not harder. There's no better feeling than thinking you've got a fair hook barrel or something and it's staying deep, it's not jumping.
And then you see colour.
And then you see the big string of slime up your line as it comes to the surface.
The moment when you see the poo brown shadow just sulking under the clear water line.
Honestly, it's only about halfway through the fight that you start to realise something's not right when it's labouring in circles under the boat in a billabong, and you've realised you've either got a GT on that's lost or a mighty catfish.
Have you had one on the table? Like, are they a bad eating fish?
I personally cannot say I have eaten a catfish. I have heard that they are a very good eating fish in some parts.
There's only so far he's willing to push this narrative, Andy. And when it comes to eating them, he's not going to own up to that.
I've got to say, just to close the record out on the caddies, I ate them over in Kununurra on a cruise many years ago. And they call them silver cobbler. And I've got to say, it was quite tasty.
You get sooties over there, don't you?
Yeah,
sooty. Yeah, you get sooties too.
Now we're talking truths. I'd be taking a sooty too, Jordan.
Yeah, I'd probably go a sooty over one.
Hey, Jordan, we've probably lost about 78.5% of the Tinny Church members by about this point in the interview. So we better, for the remaining 21.5%, if my maths is right, who are actually engaged with catfish capturing, we better get to the details of the comp this weekend.
To be awarded the Catfish King, it is the total number of catfish caught, and then our minor prizes that fall below that. It's a total centimetres, but it's the only comp where a catfish will grant you double centimetres. You get a 40-centimetre caddy, you get an 80-centimetre scorecard. It's as simple as that. So at the end of the day, you chase 40-centimetre caddies all day. It's pretty hard to beat, regardless how many barra you catch.
What are you finding the caddies are interested in at the moment? Are we using lures or is it more a bottom bouncing scenario for those that are new to the sport?
Just target barra and you'll get them.
Absolutely. Fish as hard as you can for a barra. Because as I've found over the last couple of years, the harder you try and catch catfish, the harder it is.
Whereabouts is the comp?
It's held on the in Mary River Bridge Lagoon. So we all stay at the Bridge Lagoon there, a big family event. We do a big barbecue and a cook-up on the Saturday night, and kids run amok and have a good time.
Now, there, from if my memory serves me correctly, that's quite good ground, isn't it, for caddy? That's almost a hatchery.
Oh, absolutely. Over the last few years, there's been a few scorecards in the double digits.
Yeah, it's not like you have to work too hard to avoid the unwelcome barramundi bycatch in Mary River Lagoon.
No,
it's a great spot. I couldn't think of a better place, to be honest.
Yeah, because I think someone caught that barra last year.
Hey, the one barra you'd like to catch out there is gone.
We're a broad church, we say that often, and for that very small percentage I referenced earlier, to keep them happy and appeased, have you been hearing any reports or fishing yourself elsewhere for some of the
other.
Yeah, let's just call them other. Those species with lesser prowess or interest.
Been playing around in Corroboree. Water temps are starting to come up. Saratoga is starting to feed. Obviously, the women's comp coming up in about a month's time there. My partner fishes in that. So she's looking forward to that. Done a couple of runs. I've done a couple of night runs out there. It's been a bit slow. Water temps coming up. Full moon coming up. Might start to play a part. And myself, I've done one run out blue when the wind died off. I shot out of the harbour and out to the artificials and donated about 25 kilo of lead to Dewey's on the artificials because you just can't stop them. You know, 50-pound gear and all that, I never use that kind of stuff usually. And I went heavy expecting it and still couldn't stop them. And I believe there's a few big groper in there as well because we were getting a few small nannies and goldies off it. And a few times we got about halfway up and they got eaten and they went straight back to the bottom. So it kind of rules out a shark when they turn and burn like that.
Yeah, interesting.
One big thump and then two thumbs on the spool and you're not stopping it.
A fight like that's still not a lick on a good 40-centimetre caddy though, is it?
No. It hits nowhere near as hard. Dewey's, no, it's boring. You know, suck it in, play with it, fiddle with it. Caddy's coming up. Basically pull the rod out of your hand.
You have a fabulous weekend to you and all those involved in the comp for the Palmerston Game Fishing Club, fella.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we threw the cast net and we got a 2-metre crocodile in the net.
If no one helped me, if I take it off, I cut off all the way.
Catfish.
Tales from the tinny.
Jordan Smart, who is a proper caddy lover, as is Pat Andy, who hit us up on Facebook during the week. Hey, guys, love your shows, plural. Are you doing another show?
Not that I know of.
Such a good listen. I think he might be listening to a wrong show, but he sent the pic to the right mob, because we do care about catfish, Pat. Just thought I'd share my latest catch with you. It's a catfish to almost be proud of. I'd like you to have a look at the pic of the colourings on that caddy. You can see this at ABC Tales and the Tinny on Facebook.
How do I describe this? It's like it's been painted half white and half black.
It's a Collingwood caddy.
And then, just saying that hurt me.
It's
and some of the paint's come off, so it's got a few little specks left.
It's extraordinary, Mark. It's like a Dalmatian caddy. Anyway, it's worth a little look just for... You know, what it does, actually, is take the beleaguered caddy, and that picture elevates it to something a little bit more memorable, almost worthy of Jordan's praise and adoration.
Well, I'd go so far, Tim, as to say that that's art. You could enter that in any of these art competitions.
Darwin Show.
Stick a pole up its clacker, put it on a stand.
Darwin
Show. The Darwin Show.
Darwin Show sculpture.
Most unique caddy.
Have a look. ABC Tales and the Tinny on Facebook. Unfortunately, the time has come. You might have seen it on Faceache Fishos to ban kipping on Finnis River Station. No more sleeping in that vicinity.
And fair enough, because it's dangerous. I mean, these are dangerous waterways. If you're going to
sleep on the cliff, if you sleep on the cliff, you could fall.
You're putting yourself in danger.
They're banning camping on Finnis River Station.
Which is
significant news. This includes Stingray Head. So they've made the decision based on the level of interest that Stingray Head has gained as a campground. And they're saying the public traffic on private property opens up an issue with public liability. And what so many people don't realise, particularly visitors to the territory, and it's probably not explained well enough, despite the massive signs when you drive in saying it's private property. You're there as a privilege. It's a ban only on camping, amazingly, and to their credit, public access for fishing, which includes getting to Stingray Head, includes access to the mouth of the Finnis by land along Five Mile Beach, and associated beaches, including Stingray Head, remains open. If you keep kind of disregarding the risks that the private landowner is taking on by allowing you there, it won't just be camping, it'll be access full stop and shut off. So the ban will take effect from the 10th of September. And Finnis River Station say, obviously, they regret the inconvenience caused. Obviously, caused a great deal of feedback online on both sides of the fence. By the way, while we're still on it, did you see the croc in the caravan park last week? We didn't mention that last week.
No, did I what?
It was fantastic.
Broken by our very own Liz Travascus at ABC Radio Darwin.
Yeah, what a great territory experience.
Incredible story.
Yeah, fantastic.
I said to the daughter and I looked at that online together, and I said, you know what? I'd rather be in the boat than the caravan. I know they don't. There was a bit of debate on radio about whether they could climb the stairs or not of a caravan. So say the door was open.
Would it want to?
Well, I don't know. The fact is, it's capable. It's capable, and who knows? They might like the blue cheese.
Mm. It makes it
or the footy franks or one of the things that campers keep in their indoor caravan fridge.
They won't like the blue cheese. No one likes blue cheese.
You don't know what the croc's thinking, and that's...
It makes it difficult for Parks and Wildlife to continue the be croc-wise message. I mean, don't walk outside your caravan without thongs on.
That's
a croc... I can't possibly have predicted that.
Keep your caravan door locked at all times, just in case.
A croc rocks anytime. Up at the bottom of the stairs.
Unless you're in the desert. Yeah, it's unreal. We got a hoy from Buzz. Hey, guys, took my daughter Idalia for a fish along the Catherine River. Now, things were slow at first, until she came up tight on the other end of something pretty hefty. Turned out to be a chunky catfish with a massive white scar on its head. Mm. Not the first reference to catfish in this show either, Tim. Not the first reference to a unique one either. I had to hold on to her as the caddy ran. We didn't have a net, so I had to noodle it and grab it by the bottom jaw and lift it up onto the bank for a pick, measure, and then release. It measured 84 centimetres to the fork and 93 to the tip. And about an hour later, she landed another one, not as big, but still 60 centimetres to the fork and 75 at the tip. Again, he noodles it, grabs it, bottom jaw, onto the bank. He's practiced this, so he's got it down pat by this stage. She did so well, he says, considering it was bigger than her.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. Jordan would be just sitting there listening to this.
Salivating.
Yeah, loving it.
Yeah, I agree. And look, we probably should have given a warning at the top of the tinny about the, some would say, unjustified focus on catfish through this show, but it's done now, so the warning would be of no value. Some unsurprising reactions to the post on the Mudzilla last week.
Oh, yes.
That is to say, a flurry of comments saying the likes of, it's not as big as the one we caught that time.
Didn't we just go through that?
We did. Mm. You know, we should just let the man soak up the glory in the moment.
Yeah.
But some of them were pretty impressive. I don't know if you saw the pics, so thanks for sending them. We got a whole new perspective on what a good crab is. One of them came from Shrek.
Oh, yeah.
Shrek says, here's a muddy we got at Easter out of Woods Inlet. Best ones I've seen. It's measured against a long neck of Bundy.
Wow.
Of rum.
Wow.
A long neck. So we were discussing last week the universal measure
of a
across
can.
Carapace.
Yes.
Is a can. The claw is as long as the longy. As the largy, minus the neck. That's big. Just wish we needed a longy / largy to measure them all, says Shrek. Wishful thinking, I guess. Have a good one, men.
And you too can send us a hoy at fishing@abc.net.au or, of course, through the universal medium, Faceache.
Shoot it, share it, shout it!
Give us a hoy!
G'day, Lee from Crabbing Australia here. The crabbing in Darwin here at the moment is going really well. Darwin Harbour's really firing, and creeks out of Darwin, such as, you know, Leaders Creek and Bino Harbour, out at Crab Claw and that. Some really good reports coming in.
Tell me about it. We heard of a 21 centimetre one from Bino just last week.
Yeah, that one was a really good crab, hey? Like, yeah, to get a good crab like that is really good. Like,
I can hear the envy in your voice. Don't worry. I think it was felt by many.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it was only a few months ago that I got a 20, and I thought that was great. But to see a 21 come out, that's just fantastic.
Is the 20 up on your wall or something?
Not yet. He's going to go to the taxidermist really soon. So
you're the guy behind Crabbing Australia, that Facebook page, which is, what is it, predominantly muddies or is it all crabbing?
We're looking at all crabbing really throughout Australia. So even freshwater yabbies and marrin and terrapin as well. So
how does that sit next to it? Just a big photo of like a big 21 centimetre muddy though. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, you know, the 21 centimetre muddy is just the pinnacle of it really, isn't it?
Lee, we're going to come back and maybe get some of your tips for crabbing around Darwin. But let's go to that first. Paint a picture for me of crabbing around Darwin for the last couple of months.
Darwin Harbour was a little bit hard there for a little while, but I think water temperature has changed, and there's some good reports coming out of Darwin Harbour. Leaders Creek, we just went on Saturday to Leaders Creek. We had about 1.9 metres of movement, and Leaders Creek itself actually crabs really good on deep tides. Generally, I like around about a 4-metre movement, get that scent running down the creek. We ended up with 10 on the weekend. Good size crabs.
I'm just looking at the tan on your feet. I can tell you, you spend some good time on the boat, Lee.
Yeah, we do. Bit burnt.
You mentioned the water temperature before. What kind of water temps would you consider optimal for crabs?
To be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure. There was a few months ago there, the water was, you know, up at 32 degrees, and we're getting one or two crabs, but around that 28, maybe 29, we're catching good crabs at 27. I'd have to do a lot more study on that, really, to know what temperature of water that they like.
That's right. I can tell you're a very able student. last week, Sean got his on chicken. I know you're a chicken fan too in terms of bait. Is chicken as good as it gets? Does it matter? We've had people tell us before, no, you got to use tuna. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, we ran a little bit of a, I think it was last year, who likes what sort of bait? Quite a lot of different things came up. Horse meat, buffalo meat, lamb chops. Lamb chops was an interesting one.
Jeez.
Chicken, what else? Mac tuna, as long as you get some sort of scent going down there. I know mates, he soaks his chicken carcasses in tuna oil and then freezes them and goes to quite a bit of art on his bait.
All right, well, look, you might as well get on to, you know, some of your other ideas about what makes for a good crabbing session. You kind of talked about tides, so, I mean, Leaders Creek, you can get away with neeps, but in Darwin Harbour, you sort of like a bit more movement, but not too much movement?
Not too much, I don't think. But then there's people out there that they love the big spring tides. I like 5-metre movement, but I'll crab on big springs as well, get the nets in there. My nets sit up on the front of the boat so we can fish and crab. On those bigger tides, you've really got to make sure that, you know, you've got a trap that's heavy enough to hold in those 7-metre tides. You've got to make sure that you've got enough rope, you know, so we are up to almost 8-metre tides that we can get here in Darwin. And if you're running 5 metres of rope, your float's going to go under. Your net's going to get dragged, and hence we head into having ghost nets out there. people saying that their traps got stolen, but they haven't had enough rope on that. It's travelled. It's got caught under mangrove roots. And next minute, the net's gone. Until you come back at low tide, and then you'll find it, you know, 50 metres down the trap, tangled up in the mangroves. But if you've got your rope on the water, two possibilities that can happen there. Say your float's sitting on the water. One, crocodiles love to come up and investigate what's on the water, and they'll have a good smash at it. Two, once that water drops, that float will float in under the mangroves, get stuck there, the rope gets caught, tide comes back up 7 metres, another ghost net's in our waterways. We run 10 metres of rope, a 150 float, and then we drop our pot, wait, that hits the bottom, and then our floats and ropes go all the way up into the mangroves. So we've got a straight rope running up and down. It's no chance of it getting pushed in and tangled up under the roots.
So you talked about your kind of optimal tides, but at what stage during the tide do you try to have your traps out?
I generally try to get my traps in at low tide, the lowest I can get it at, depending on my boat. But we try to get them in, get the nets underwater at low tide, get that in-running tide so that scent will get pushed up the creek. Once that tide starts rising and it gets over the crab holes, they'll come out for a feed. And then generally I've found once we get to about high tide, our crabbing's done for the day. Generally I like to just keep an eye on my nets, keep an eye on my fishing gear, and make sure that I can bring that fishing gear back home and not leave it in the ocean. So
how about positioning of trap? Is there a common setup that you're looking for? Are you just looking for a drain? Is that fine? What is it? What's the optimum placement in your book?
I'm still learning, really. Some areas I think, oh, geez, this looks real crabby. This is great, you know, and come back and there's nothing there. Other areas is, yeah, we do look for those drains. We try looking for holes in the bank, see if they're around, oysters, you know, if there's some oysters or oyster rocks around. Bit of a get out there, have a go, and then start learning as you go, really.
But fair to say that you can return to exactly the same spots where you've had success before and you'll be able to repeat that success, potentially?
Yeah, most certainly. And there's creeks out in Shoal Bay, have a lot of travellers crab them. And the crabs just seem to turn over and another one takes its place, and it's quite amazing to watch a creek. And there's one little creek out there in Mickets and it gets hammered, but it just produces crab and keeps going and keeps going. And Shoal Bay crab, they're not massive in the body, but they've got good big claws, where if you go over West Arm, you know, on the other side of the harbour, they're a bigger body crab, big clawed crab over that side.
Bloody hell, I mean, you say you're an amateur, but you know you're crabbing, son. Jesus.
Still learning. Yeah.
All right, Lee. Well, look, thanks for the invite into the crabbing boat, which I've got to say is a lot cleaner than I was expecting. So good on you. we'll catch you soon.
Yeah, no worries. Cheers, Beard. Thanks, mate.
There's a cracking podcast show Aussie fishos all know. Some say it even cures a hangover. Couple of bopheads speaking crap. Seems they have it right on tap. What's it called? It's the tinny all over. Mud crab bites your hand stuck high and dry on tidal sand. It's bound to make you lose your composure. But there's a few there for the pan. You deserve a nice cold can. Sounds to me like the tinny all over. Hooray! Jump aboard. It's the tinny all over.
Well, I love it.
Well, Tim, as I was walking the bed of the Todd River, just waiting for the tide to come in, admiring the snags, I was listening to you and Beard on last week's show around this Mudzilla crab.
Impressive, eh?
Yeah, caught on chicken, which is a bit of a sort of a genre classic, isn't it? But I think there's a different kind of fisho out there who relishes using very high quality bait, indeed a bit fancy even.
Fancy bait fisher.
Well, Stacey is one of them, and he's been doing all right on the crabs. Yet this conversation isn't just another crab yarn, Tim. We're about to wander around a fair bit of territory, including but not limited to dewies in the shallow water, a lot of barra, and interestingly, the perils of buying a boat off Marketplace.
Excellent. This sounds like we're covering a lot of bases.
Stacey, g'day. But first, mate, what's your go-to bait been lately?
Yeah, boys, Mangrove Jacks for some bait, eh? You got to go top shelf if you want top shelf. Can't waste a good frame, mate. I go out and I target a jack. I normally pick up a jack and throw them in a pot and pick up a crab.
Does the crab have the same sense of class that we do, i.e., will he or she savour a mangrove jack frame or a coral trout frame over some sort of dirty queenie or brassy frame?
That is the key question.
Do they know the difference?
We might have to just run on the flavoursome side. I think the tasty boys really go for the jack, and the ones that aren't so full seem to be hitting the queenies. So, yeah, we've tried a few different tactics on the crabs this year. We've dropped jack frames, you know, a few goldie frames, threw a barracuda in the other day. That wasn't real fun.
No. So what you're saying is a territory mud crab is basically a territory fisho in terms of their palate.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be just the go-to, mate. As soon as we drop a jack in there, you know, 20-minute pull, you got two.
A mud crab's been sitting in these waters for millennia. It makes sense that they're going to favour the higher quality table fish over a barracuda.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're probably going to tell their mates too. I mean,
they're not going to go for trickies.
Go up bleezers, look for the green pots with the pink boy.
Yeah,
they're serving mangrove jacks
and coral trout.
Don't go to the Queenfish Cafe.
And I don't want to jump ahead too much here, Stacey, but this also indicates that if you have the capacity to put mangrove jack frames and coral trout frames in your crab bait pots, you're targeting them pretty successfully. How and where are you doing that?
At the junction, I'd actually never caught a mangrove jack until February this year. It's always been one of those things I wanted to target, just never sort of put me mind to it. But a good friend of mine said, nah, today's the day, we're going to a spot and we're going to go pick some jacks off the list. And between two boats, we boated 55 jacks for a day. Obviously all released, and set a PB of 47 for that day. Once February came around, I've sort of been bitten by the jack bug.
Now the inevitable question, do you want to ask it or do I, Andy?
I'm still just absorbing what I'm hearing, so you
Stacey,
go. Stacey,
where's the junction?
It'd probably have to be between North Arm.
Oh, you're going to do this, aren't you?
Yeah.
Don't bother. Don't move on.
I cannot give away a secret spot, mate.
Between Woods Inlet and
blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Okay.
Byron Bay.
I tried.
If you stand on one leg and spin three times, mate, you'll find it.
Yeah, roger that. You had a session the other day with the partner and Rhino, who's our kingfisher saviour, the dude with the exceedingly huggable beard.
I got the mixed bag that day. Big Rhino went for barra, got barra. It's good when you can sort of pick your species and throw them in the boat. That's always a good day on the water. The barra at the moment, sort of getting those early 50s into the 60s. So just sort of tapping them on the head, doing a little bit of teabag action, finding them on the rock bars if you can find a bit of rock bar. But, yeah, vibes seem to be the go at the moment. You're pretty much pissing it off. It's kind of, you know, poke the bear and it's going to bite. So that's what we're looking for. I just had zero luck on any hard body stuff lately. Tried a bit of shallow water stuff, trying to pull them out of the shallows. Just it's not working. So vibes, that's where it's at.
Just head down the junction.
Yeah, the junction's got a few different twists and turns in it, mate. So
there's a clue. Don't bring it up again. Your partner hooked a big dewey too in shallow water.
Yeah, 6 metres of water, you know, threw the anchor out. The old Minkota's not quite working at the moment, so sitting on the anchor, and my lovely wife does get annoyed with me. I do boat a few in front of her, and she kind of wonders why I'm doing it and she's not, but she's got this little knack of pulling some monsters in front of me, and yeah, let's just say a 110 dewey on a vibe on barra gear is not Not bad.
Wow.
So the pattern is you're doing quantity. Every now and again, she just smashes it apart with some remarkable capture, like a 110 Dewey on Barrack here in 6 metres.
I swear to God, between me, kids and my missus, I'm doing quantity. These guys just pulling quality.
Yeah, you're
constantly.
You're a perfect combo.
Well, coming from a family that feeds mangrove jacks to mud crabs, I'd expect nothing less.
Now, tell us, Stacey, about this second-hand boat.
Yes, the boat.
Off Marketplace, dare we ask. Mm. A story that apparently has both a happy and a sad ending.
Starts off happy, goes sad, becomes happy. All right. It's a bit of a Disney fairy tale sort of thing, you know.
So yin yang yin.
Yeah, pretty much. So I started fishing up here out of a Formosa 520. Beautiful boat, half cab, had a young family, could just jam the rugrats up the front, you know. They couldn't annoy me up there. Kids have started getting bigger, started running out a bit of room in the back of that boat, so made the decision to sell, on the hunt for a new one. East Coast, West Coast, North Coast, South Coast, looking for a boat that I thought was going to be it. Just so happened, found one in Yeppoon, of all places. Started pulling the deck apart, and first bit of timber came up. First crack showed. Second crack showed. Third crack, fourth crack, fifth crack.
Oh, no.
Ouch.
So we just started. Yeah, started pulling the timbers up, and, you know, with every second crack, I had to drink a beer. So the contemplation came to just go and sink it. it was going to be better off as an artificial reef, mate. So, Jesus.
And we do love an optimist here on the tinny.
I was not expecting that.
Just an option, Tim. He's just establishing the continuum. Yep.
Seriously, then I went and got on Marketplace and bought a decent boat. Yeah. Went and bought brand new. All right, so you fixed it in the end, did you?
Roughly 8-9 weeks, just after work and weekends. And I discovered pretty much every rib on the left-hand side, top and bottom, broken. The fuel tank snapped. All four mounts, the fuel tank was actually sitting in the hull and rubbed to
someone
the point where it was about a mil.
Mashed that boat.
So someone's had a major collision, yeah?
Yeah. So we worked it out. We had a look at it, did the old tape measure corner to corner, square him up, and sure enough, she had a bit of a hit on the left-hand side, and I don't believe it was on the water. Possibly, you know, on trailer, road accident, not sure.
Oh.
Seller told me this boat was beautiful. You know, 2013 hull, 2017 motor, 2017 trailer. Probably was a giveaway on the 2017 trailer.
Where you at now with it?
On the water, mate, bashing it out most afternoons, weekends. It's been a lot of work. It's been almost to the point of tears, just like, what the f*** am I doing? It shouldn't be this hard, but buyer beware, it is the internet.
Yeah, look, the unfortunate part is it is the internet, but you're also dealing with humans at the end of it, so it's unfortunate, you know, if they know something's happened to it, that it ends up that way.
And if nothing else, I bet you one thing, Andy, that the mongrel who sold this boat is not in the privileged position of using mangrove jack and coral trout for mud crabs.
No.
And let that be the end of it, other than having to note quickly before we wrap up, if you wouldn't mind, Stacey.
Yes.
Yeah, mate.
That your partner's name
is Stacey.
It's an unusual situation. You've got to grant that.
Yeah. I've had a couple of jail sentences worth of time. We've been together for over 16 years, so it's plenty of time to get used to it. I'm Mr. and she's Mrs. Boy, girl. That's sort of the way we roll.
I think it's fantastic. And when you met, you already had something in common the second that you met.
Yeah,
that's unique.
It's so deeply harmonious, isn't it? And I bet you, as you were out there for 1,023 hours welding that boat together, Stacey was right by your side backing you, Stacey.
Yeah, mate, she was sort of like the push. You do so many hours and then you kind of get disheartened, so you pull stumps and just say, f*** it. And she'd come out with a beer and she's just, yeah, come on, let's keep going.
God bless the junction. I'll dream of the junction tonight as I go off to sleep.
You will. You'll be texting this bloke. Yeah, me, Stacey, and Stacey.
In the vault.
Yep.
Let's talk about the junction. Stacey, tell him nothing.
Secrets are secrets for a reason.
That's it, mate. And let's keep abreast of your missions in the boat, mate, after you've got her back together. It must have been a huge challenge, but worth it. Now she's floating.
Rolling into neeps, mate. Can't beat them. Cheers, fellas.
Red, fast and free. Presenting the Tales from the Tinny Fish Measuring Sticker. Some say it's been scented with a barramundi pheromone. Some say it's scientifically proven in the effective removal of leg hair. Some say that these stats might be slightly exaggerated. Much like your fishing yards without a Tales from the Tinny Fish Measuring Sticker. Email fishing@abc.net.au or message the Tinny on Facebook to get yours.
Now, thanks to Neville himself, Tim, the dark, wet season grey skies of the stickers can occasionally have a rainbow protruding through. We normally sit here and justify Neville's lack of performance, lack of delivery.
We do.
But from Daryl in Bachelor, he opens up like this. Here are the first few words. Thanks so much for the tinny stickers.
No, that's extraordinary.
Here's a bloke who got his stickers.
And in a timely fashion.
In a timely manner as well. I was telling my chemo nurse yesterday about my superpower, Daryl writes. My toe-pinching strength is equal to that of a mud crab. And bugger me.
Really? This is how it opens?
Yeah, yeah, this is fantastic. Bugger me.
What did the nurse say?
She says that her partner has the same powers.
Wow.
Anyway, he's on his way home and he had this mental image and he announced to his partner that the Tales from the Tinny sticker had finally arrived. It was in the post box, actually in the post box. He's very grateful. Thank you, he says. Made my day. Cheers, fellas. Get a mullet up here. Thanks heaps, Daryl. And hope you're doing okay.
And yeah, absolutely, Daryl. But it's a good lesson too on when we say you just need to tell us a yarn to get a sticker, you can do that. You can say, I was talking to my nurse. I'm in a pretty challenging spot. About the power of my toes being similar to the grip strength of a muddy. That'll do. You get a sticker.
Love it.
You know what's really interesting about this batch of stickers? This is actually the last of them.
Really?
If you want stickers, Neville has actually delivered.
Oh.
Man, it's been 12, 16, and it's been a lot of years.
It's about, I think it's 14 years, maybe it's 15 done. Years, it, yeah.
Mate. If you want a sticker,
really,
now is the time.
So Neville's nearly on top of his workload, is what you're saying.
Nearly on top of the workload. It's extraordinary and unprecedented.
We should give him a bonus. Let him keep his job.
This from Lumpy, the sticker questioner. Didn't need a go fast, blah, blah, inaccurate sticker to measure this 110 Far North Queensland barra.
Oh.
Side scanned up half a dozen big ones on a bend and threw a vibe. Till I got one of them. Took about half an hour to get the bite, but I got him. Well, nice going, Lumpy. Nice to know we were in your thoughts as the silver slab hit the deck, and well done. Should we send him a sticker as a peacemaking exercise? Maybe we should just send him 10 stickers that he finds grossly inaccurate and offensive. Would that be a proportionate response?
Since when are you interested in proportionate responses?
No, they're just true.
Hmm. I thought you were more about grossly disproportionate responses.
There was always that kid in school, wasn't there? You call him a name, next minute you're getting dacked. Like what? Since when was a dacking equal to name calling? Completely disproportionate. And yes, I am a fan.
It's a very serious concept, though. You realise that law courts talk about reasonable and proportionate.
Yeah,
proportionate.
Not interested.
But it's a legal concept.
But when it comes
to
our stickers...
It goes to the heart of a whole lot of things.
But when it comes to our stickers, right, and people calling them into question and their length and the veracity and accuracy...
Yeah, yeah. Do we care?
Do we care?
Hang on. Let me think. No.
No, we don't.
Tales from the Tinny. Get a mullet up, ya.
Andy, you'd remember this, although perhaps remember because at the time you never really understood it.
And finally, nice blue bone Keith Watson.
What, that's it? Nice blue bone Keith Watson.
What's the good of the magic of the airwaves, Tim, if we can't use this medium to congratulate someone for landing a blue bone on the flats in the harbour?
On the flats in the harbour?
Yeah.
You're right. Nice blue bone Keith Watson. You know, that's the sort of phrase that's applicable, like if you're a pea plater and your mate does a nice burnout. It's going, nice blue bone, Keith Watson.
Nice blue bone, Keith
it's
Watson.
It's just understood.
Yeah.
Noteworthy and deserved of some recognition.
Get a good coffee at the cafe. Oh, nice blue bone, Keith Watson.
Yeah, it could be on a T-shirt, you know.
Let's do it.
beautiful bowling, you know, the wiki. Nice blue bone, Keith Watson.
And he's taken it just off the off stump. Nice blue bone, Keith Watson.
A 105 Barra. Nice blue bone, Keith Watson.
What?
Don't worry about it. Another way of thanking me, you could just say something like, I don't know, nice blue bone, Keith Watson.
I still don't understand that, but just if it makes it. You feel better, nice blue bone, Keith Watson. Yes, I never did at the time, Tim, but I think I do now. So if I can reflect and give you an example to test my understanding of nice blue bone, Keith. Back in the Little League under-12s, I remember it vividly, Graythorn Park was, and we won our first game, and Teddy James kicked 7 goals. Now, back then, that would have been appropriate had the clock been moved forward for me to say to him...
If you turned to Teddy and said...
Nice blue bone, Keith Watson.
It would have been perfect placement.
He would have talked about his goal kicking and said, no worries, mate, thanks.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
I'm on board,
because
on board.
Because sometimes culture, Andy, is inscrutable. It works in mysterious and complicated ways, but... You seem to have come around now, so respect. You kind of got it.
Beauty.
It's important to reflect on nice blue bone Keith Watson as we bring forth the very man at the centre of it all who's been on the blue water actually a fair bit lately, courtesy of guiding for offshore boats. But first, nice blue bone Keith Watson. Keith Watson.
Thank you very much. As you know, that blue bone is from a few months ago, back when the weather was a little bit warmer and not as windy. But either way, at the end of the day, it doesn't defeat from, it is a nice blue bone.
It's deserving of the phrase. Yeah. Oh, please tell me you haven't had anyone coming up and saying that to you randomly, though, bro. That would be confusing and probably quite annoying.
Well, it's funny you say that. I think our mate Russell, old Russell Walton, I've got a feeling he's actually said it to me once, maybe twice, and I'm sure I've given him the stare of, Russ, what are you on right now? And but I have heard it before, and I think it might have been from Russ.
Oh, you have been hitting the blue of late, though, mate. As a kind of a guide in training, how's that been? And what have you been noticing? What have you been chasing?
Guiding and training's a very good way of putting it for someone that's a barra fisherman. Learning to reef fish and sports fish again is a little bit of a challenge, but very rewarding all the same. Some of the spots I've been to recently, I've looked at the sounder, and the sounder has been amazing, but we can't raise a scale. If there's not much movement at all, the fish, they will sit there, but they don't generally feed that well. As soon as you start get some current running and that, it starts to turn on.
Well, I can 100% relate to that, because I hit the harbour yesterday, and the screen for most of the day was lit up like a Christmas tree, and I returned fishless. So, like, what is it? And the other thing I find frustrating about the blue compared to the barra is that you can't read all those signs on the water. All the things, apart from the birds, of course, but all the things that you can read in a inland waterway, I find it really difficult to read the ocean.
You know, with the barra, we know there's, you know, a colour change, or there's some bait hanging on a colour change, or there's a back eddy, or there's a nice gutter, and you're almost... You know, it's not a sure thing, but it's almost a sure thing that you're going to find a fish there. And if you pest it enough, it's going to bite. On the blue water, yeah, it's a lot harder to read it. But there are a few tricks that I'm starting to learn on the blue, especially around reef systems and stuff like that. But it does take time. And like I've already said, it's actually quite rewarding for myself to see that I've done a great job. I've put my guests in the right spot, and we've managed to... Bring a fish over the gunwale, which is sensational.
Quality of structure and the type of structure is obviously relevant, Keith, but equally the currents and how they're moving in and around and pushing against that structure is a really important factor for targeting blue water bottom species a lot of the time, isn't it?
Absolutely, mate. And that's something I've had to learn. You've nailed it there. It's where that current actually hits that structure, and which way it peels or it goes over the top, it all means something different. Causes a pressure, and the fish like to sit there. But it can be very, very hard to nail down on that exact point. And sometimes near enough is good enough, but other times near enough is not enough.
is one meter away. Like electric motors have changed that from the days when you have to cast the anchor out and just let it out, give it another meter, give it another 2 meters, you drift to the left, you drift to the right. But electric motors haven't solved it, have they? Because sometimes 1 or 2 meters is enough to catch nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great challenge. It's a great challenge. And when you get it good. When you don't get it, you're left scratching your head and go, oh, you know, what went wrong, or how can I do that better next time? Generally, is don't fish that spot on that tide. But there's one thing I actually want to ask Andy. Have you been finding many of those long tails, mate? Around?
Why would you, Key?
Well,
it's only a matter.
I need this for my own homework. Well, let's say.
Way you go, Andy. You've got 20 seconds.
Rightio. Well, if I can just open up by saying I like you, Keith.
15 seconds.
Very much. So I did. I headed to 6 Mile yesterday. Last time I was at 6 Mile 3 weeks ago. They weren't touching anything. None of the lures, none of the flies. They didn't. He's watching the clock, Tim. Yeah. They didn't take a thing. Yesterday I didn't get any, but I had a couple hit right next to the boat.
Bing, bing, bing.
They were hungry again for lures. So 6 Mile, between 6 Mile Boy and the other green one near Mandora, they're only standing up for 10, 15 seconds maximum.
Time.
Yeah.
It's not Parliament, Tim. It's not Parliament House.
Yeah. It's Tales from the Tinny. Area myself. There has been a few there. They've been very flighty. I haven't seen much offshore from everywhere I've been, you know, out wide, you know, east and west. There hasn't been much around. But when I have actually found them, I must say that the bait that they're feeding on is very small. And it's very hard to try and match the hatch.
Hoovering the bait, and that's why they weren't taking any. But yesterday, like I said, there was interest on the lures, so I was getting bumps, I just wasn't connecting. So something's changed where they're going for bigger baits.
They're very late at showing up this year, I think. Like, is it the bait or is it the temperature? I don't know what it is. I just find it out of the normal to what we're actually used to seeing.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that, because I had a bit of a chat to Bikini Dave yesterday, who we're probably going to get on the show next week, and he's going to talk about exactly that. You are right. They have shown up late, but there are some very, very good reasons for that, and we'll try and cover that next week.
You're heading out yourself, I think, tomorrow, aren't you? Back to targeting Barra, or you're going to keep working on the blue in your downtime?
No, I'm going to have a relaxation day. I'm going to chase the old barramundi, hopefully get up into the snags, up into the mangroves a bit, and try and sight cast. This time of year is really, really good for sight casting the barra up in the mangroves and around some of the snags. The water's fairly clear, and the barra actually seem to sit there a little bit longer. They don't spook as easy, so you can get take your time to get a good presentation in and pass them, and hopefully a hookup. So that's tomorrow's plan, followed up with maybe a long tail or two later in the afternoon on that incoming tide.
Have you always found this a good window sort of through August and September for harbour flats?
Absolutely. I would almost put it out there that especially September is harbour flats is probably my favourite in September, I'd say. But in saying that, last month, the last time I actually went for a barra fish, I pulled an 83 on the flats. I knew there was going to be a big fish there because it's a big fish drain. And every time I've been able to see that drain, because you can't always see it, but if you can see it, you can always pull a big fish out of that. And I've pulled 4 or 5 in the 80s now out of that one drain over the last couple of years. Yeah.
Just a real quick question before we wrap up. Are you on those neeps where you can stay up in the mangroves the whole time, or are you backing off where you can actually have to sit in a channel and watch it run out?
Yeah, very interested in the tidal window you like, mate.
Yeah, at the back of the neap. So you've still got some clean water, but you've got a longer tidal range where you can stay up in that mangroves. Where on the springs, it's really hard. Like, you've got a very quick, like 15, 20 minutes max in the key spots, and you've got to get, otherwise you're staying there.
Rightio. Well, I hope tomorrow's good for you, Keith. I hope you get a barra, and I hope you get a tuna to cap it off. But what I hope most of all is you do something that makes someone say to you, nice blue bone, Keith Watson.
I'm going to have to get a stubby cooler with that on it now,
I
think.
You definitely are. See you, fella.
All right, boys. Thanks a lot. Speak to you later.
Well, that's it from us for another week, Fishos. And it is nice to be back, Tim, in the studio, out of the river with no water in it, back to a place where there's actually fish, can't catch them.
Yeah, it's got to be. You know they're there, man. It's a nice feeling.
It is. It is indeed. Hey, thanks very much to Jordan, the Caddy King. I should say, Tim, we've spoken a bit about catfish this episode, and I'm okay with it. because it just it goes to one of our values as a church, and that value is diversity.
Yeah, I'm not, and I am going to undertake and give an assurance, Fishos, that next week there'll be less caddies. I won't say none.
I think you've got to share the love among the species. Anyway, to Lee the Crab King, thank you very much. To Mr. Stacey and Mrs. Stacey, I still can't believe they're both called. I think that's sensational.
It is extraordinary.
And you know what? In a world of complexity, I think it's beautiful to simplify stuff.
The simplicity.
And that is definitely simplifying, giving the whole family the same name. Yeah. Thanks also to Gianluca, who demonstrated, well, I think just how hard jetty fishos sometimes have it.
And I had to jump through the stairs, avoiding the pillars, avoiding the rubbish bin, avoiding the kids. There's some mackie, some mackerel.
To all involved in this week's episode, we say, nice blue bone, Keith Watson. And a special shout out to Keith Watson himself, to whom we also say, nice blue bone, Keith Watson, Keith Watson.
I think we've probably, it's been great, Tim. I think we've already enjoyed it, but I think we've probably got to give this a rest for a bit.
Yeah, probably. It'll start to lose meaning otherwise, won't it?
Meaning? It doesn't actually have meaning anyway.
Well, it didn't have meaning in the first place.
No.
Yes, it did.
No, it didn't.
Look, it's like I said, mate. Culture's complicated. It's like get a mullet up you. It's just something you kind of feel. So until next week, Fishers, just feel getting a mullet right on up you.